everybody. Welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Andrews Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing? It's very, very nice, sunny afternoon.
Pretty good.
Doing pretty well.
All right, so for Promote Extend Trade, I think this should be a good one. And if you listen to our podcast as soon as it comes out, it'll be May the 4th, and that obviously has Star Wars connotations. So of these Star Wars video games, what are we going to promote, extend,
Steve,
or trade?
Steve, you're finally speaking my language. It only took 50 fucking episodes, and we're finally here.
So for promote, I guess that's going to be the game that we kind of like play a little bit, but all right, that, you know, whatever, we move on. Extend is the one that we just kind of like become engrossed with. And then trade is obviously, you know, trade. That's the one we bring back to GameStop for 10 cents.
Yep.
So first we have Knights of the Old Republic. Then we have Star Wars Battlefront 2, the original one from like PS2.
Yeah,
Xbox.
Just making sure, not the new shitty EA version.
Definitely
just
not.
Just like the simulations.
And last one is Galactic Battlegrounds.
Which one is Galactic Battlegrounds?
That's like the StarCraft.
Yeah. Okay. I remember playing that. That's tough.
Mm-hmm. So this one's easy for me because I didn't play Galactic Battlegrounds. I know I would like it because I like games like that, but I just have never played it. Mm. So, KOTOR is one of my favorite games ever, so that's getting extended. Like, it's not Battlefront's fault, but like, I love that game too, but KOTOR, like, I've played it so many times and it's so good every time.
I've played all three. I'm going to trade Battlegrounds because even when I was playing Battlegrounds, I still preferred I love Star Wars games. I still enjoy the franchise, so I've liked it less as the years have gone on. I preferred Age of Empires or that franchise in terms of RTS at the time. So I'm trading Battlegrounds. KOTOR versus Battlefront is hard. That's a tough one, Steve. And I hate that you're making me choose. Here's the thing, right? Like, KOTOR was and is incredible. But RPGs age so terribly. Like, you go back and play KOTOR or even, like, the first Mass Effect, it's still good. Like, the story's good, but holy hell, it's clunky. It's all, like, it's not great. Like, your character does one attack and then stands there bobbing for 3 seconds, and then does another thing, and it...
I tried to play the first Mass Effect, I think, last summer. And I was telling my friend, I can't, I'm missing every shot because I have no idea where anything's going. And he's just like, yeah, it's going to take a minute because I'm used to, like, 2 and 3 where they kind of figured out the combat, but the combat is just so...
Mass Effect is still just such an incredible RPG. Despite the clunkiness, I think I'll extend KOTOR and promote Battlefront, though. Damn it, Steve.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I traded Battlegrounds. I love it, but I think just the story aspect of it is what does it in, I guess. There really is not much of the story.
Fair. There isn't at all.
Like, you could sit there and make up your own scenarios. I don't know if there was online play at the time. Well, yeah, I guess there had to have been. But I did not, you know, have an internet good enough to do that. So it was just basically me and my sister, like, making up our own games, which is extremely fun. You could sit there for hours, but after that, you know, like, yeah.
One of my most distinct memories from Battlefront playing it with friends is for somebody at one time made an offer. You could purchase a leader in between planetary battles or whatever, right? And at some point, someone called that the Lederhosen upgrade, and that just stuck. I don't know how
That's
old
awesome.
We were, 10 to 12? It was like,
awesome.
Oh no, he's using the Lederhosen, and that just became a thing for years playing that game.
That's awesome. Yeah, but Knights of the Old Republic is just the best. Mm-hmm. It's just hard not to say it isn't.
I mean, and then they made the second one.
The second one isn't bad.
I know, but they just rushed it.
Yeah, I mean, it literally doesn't have an ending. Like, you need to download, like, an actual mod to actually have the game end properly, but...
Jeez, I BioWare never made that mistake again. Never once.
Oh,
not at all salty about that still, just...
Yeah. I like a lot of what KOTOR 2 did, and then when I first played it, I didn't really know that the ending was kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ended, and I was like, that's it. But, like, it went to zero to, like, a million in, like, 5 minutes, and it ended. Mm-hmm. It was very clear that they rushed it out of the door to get it on shelves.
It was like the Sopranos ending, but literally the opposite of what you want.
Had EA purchased BioWare at that point? KOTOR 2.
That was made by Obsidian.
KOTOR 2 was made by Obsidian, so it wasn't BioWare again?
BioWare pawned it off to them because they were supposed
Right, but it's still on their engine. Right. You're right.
I mean, though, Fallout New Vegas doesn't have an ending for some of the scenarios either, so
it's
still,
exactly.
Still their MO.
Yeah.
It's a very similar thing, actually, but I like New Vegas a lot.
New Vegas is the best.
I never got the New Vegas love, I'm sorry.
Really?
No, it never did it for me.
That's okay.
On a totally unrelated Star Wars note, I don't suppose either of you have watched the Clone Wars animated show, do you?
I watched it a while ago, but I'm going to go back and rewatch it.
The final season is... The final episode ever is tomorrow, which is...
Has it been good, the last season?
Oh, my God. Well, okay, so, like, I'm sorry, Steve. We're off on a huge tangent here. I can stop if you want me to.
No, go ahead.
So, for those of you who don't know, Star Wars The Clone Wars was a really... It started off as this really campy, kiddie cartoon show set between episodes 2 and 3, and Anakin gets this apprentice, Ahsoka, and it started as an anthology, and then, like, around season 3, they pull it together, and it becomes an incredible show. Then it got canceled for no reason. They went on to make a Star Wars Rebels show, and then that finished. And then they went back and said, you know, let's actually finish Clone Wars. So the past couple weeks, they've been pumping out this final season. And it's basically 3-4 episode arcs. The first two arcs were good. But this last arc has been, Ahsoka going into Order 66. So basically it's pushing through Revenge of the Sith from her perspective. And it's incredible and tense and heartbreaking, and it's been excellent. So I'm going to be an emotional wreck tomorrow when that final episode airs.
They really figured out a good plot within the prequels, which is a disaster. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that's always interesting about it to me.
The character of Ahsoka has honestly become my favorite Star Wars character in any media. They turned her from like an annoying, campy character at the start to just so well developed, flushed out, and she's going to be in the next season of The Mandalorian, so I'm super pumped.
Oh wait, who's playing her?
Rosario Dawson.
Yeah, that's who it is. It was someone
Yeah. After she's been voiced by Ashley Eckstein for a decade now. So anyway, I'm done. May the 4th.
All right. Yes, May the 4th. So last week I spoke with Rob and Dan about the CPBL and the KBO, and we adopted the Uni President Lions and the LG Twins as our teams in those respective leagues. We touched on, you know, more than just who to root for in the interview. So if you haven't listened to them already, I suggest that you check out our last episode and listen to the whole thing, but obviously pay attention to the interviews with Rob and Dan. So the season Korea hasn't started yet. It's about to. It's going to start this upcoming week. But play in Taiwan is going strong, and the Lions went 3-1 last week. Right fielder Anko Lin, he was definitely the player of the week. He hit homers in three straight games, and he actually tied a record in the league for hitting 4 in a row, but that first one came prior to last week. So all in all, he went 7-15 with 3 homers, 12 RBI, 2 strikeouts, 2 walks, and a stolen base. And he was the Lions' number one draft pick last year, and he might be given a chance to be a two-way player. He needs to kind of improve on his pitching, which is not up to the caliber of the league, which is actually kind of bad. So he might not ever be a two-way player, but it's fun that he wants to be. So his future is definitely bright. Third baseman, Fulin Kuo. He also had a pretty good week. He went 6-for-14 with 3 homers, 6 RBI, 2 strikeouts and a walk. The Yankees originally scouted him and signed him, and he was in their system for a little bit. Obviously didn't work out, and he went back to Taiwan, but he's been pretty solid with them when he's healthy. But the problem with him is that he's been hurt a lot, so he needs to start those.
How Metsian?
Yeah, he needs to start those those plasma-rich platelet infusions. Pitching-wise,
he needs the bone shots that Zach Wheeler got.
Yeah, yeah.
God, those were the most terrible. Like, yeah, I'm getting injections in my stomach to make my bones stronger. That sounds like a bad DC hero origin story.
It does. Pitching-wise, like Rob was talking about last week in our interview, pitching is not a strength of the league. Left-hander Chen Yin Chiang, he had the best week of anyone. He had 5 shutout innings in his start, and he bounced back from a really bad one the week before when he gave up 9 runs over 4 innings. The two Western pitchers that are on their roster right now, Don Roach and Ryan Fierabend, they both struck out 8 batters, but they also allowed a bunch of runs. So, you know, good and bad.
He's a big-time meme in the MLB The Show community. Firebrand, because he's a knuckleballer, and he's still in the game. So, like, trolly people online bring him out in competitive games, and he's, like, impossible to hit. And he's, like, 58 overall, and it's just annoying.
Does this game do a good job of modeling the weirdness of the knuckleball? I say this as someone who hasn't played it.
It's a pain, yeah. It's a pain in the ass.
But if you hit it, it goes far, typically?
Usually if you hit it and it goes far, the people who use him quit right away. I wish
actual knuckleballers did that. I want to see, like, R.I. Dickey, if we could just give up a laser beam homer and just walk off the field. It's like, I'm done.
The last time I faced him, I hit a 2-run home run off of him, and the dude quit before the ball ended. Like, it just said, and I was like, yeah, that's what you get for bringing in a knuckleballer.
Were you playing me by any chance?
Too real.
It wasn't City Field, but I.
maybe the first week or so that the game came out, I got a Steven Wright card. So I was just like, oh, sweet. Like you said, one wrong move with the knuckleball in that game, and you're dead.
That game still has like a my player functionality kind of thing, right? Can you make yourself a knuckleballer?
I think you can. I never have made one a pitcher online because I don't know if they set the pitches you can have everyone would.
Oh, okay.
But everyone, if they create a pitcher and put them online, it's some side like submariner who throws 102 or whatever, and they're always annoying to you.
The fuck.
Yeah.
Joe Smith, but also Aroldis Chapman makes sense.
Exactly.
So a little bit now about just the history of baseball in Taiwan, I guess, for this week's episode, since there's not too much else going on. But I wanted to give everyone, like, you know, some context since we're going to be following this team and this league and everything. So basically the reason why Taiwan has kind of a advanced, I guess we want to call it, baseball culture, but mainland China doesn't, is because until 1945, Taiwan was a dependency of the Empire of Japan. It was acquired in the Sino-Japanese War at the end of the 19th century. And at that point, baseball had already been introduced to Japan, and it was getting more and more popular by the day. So it makes sense that the Japanese in Taiwan brought it with them. Obviously, things were not always peaceful, and there were minor and pretty major conflicts between the people of Taiwan and the Japanese government, much like any other, you know, colonial power lording over native peoples. But eventually, baseball became part of the culture of the non-Japanese people in Taiwan. And when Japan left and Taiwan got its independence, you know, obviously there's still a lot going on with that today, but we'll call it independence and everything. And, you know, they embraced that baseball culture. And over the decades, Taiwan participated in things like Little League World Series, Baseball World Cup, the Olympics, but there never actually was a formal baseball league. And anyone that played in high school or college, if they showed any kind of promise to play professionally, they went to either Korea or Japan and they played there. But in the mid 80s, there was a push to actually create a domestic league of their own. It was basically started and pushed through by one man, Teng Shang-hyung, who is the chairman of Brothers Hotel Chain, which then got its own, which sponsored a team. But he got enough corporate sponsorships from other groups, and the CPBL was born. And it's existed for about 30 years now. There's currently 5 teams, but there were others in the past. The defunct teams that no longer exist are the China Times Eagles, the China Trust Whales, the D-Media T-Rex, and nice. The Mercury's Tigers.
There is a T-Rex team?
Yeah.
Damn it.
It's a Dinos team in Korea, too.
Mm-hmm. The Whales and the Tigers, they both dissolved because of financial issues from their parent companies, but the Eagles and the T-Rex became defunct. Interesting stories because of scandal. The Eagles, they were heavily tied to a big game-fixing scandal in 1997, and that hurt their popularity enough that the China Times basically didn't want to be associated with the team anymore. So they lost their corporate sponsorship, and they disappeared. And the T-Rex, the same thing happened with them. They were involved in a game-fixing scam. This one is in the late 2000s, and the league basically disbarred them. The whole team just got thrown out of the league as a result.
Are you telling me they didn't just lose a first-round pick and get a $5 million fine?
Nope.
Huh. I thought that was the maximum possible penalty for cheating.
Well, go figure. I guess there's a difference between cheating and, like, game fixing.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually kind of interesting. There's been a lot of gambling and game-fixing scandals in the CPBL's, you know, history of basically just 30 years from from the 90s on till today. And if you look at like baseball history in the U.S. here, a lot of those kind of scandals happened in the earliest days of the MLB, like 1900 and 1940, let's say, when the players had no rights, they were paid the lowest percentage of what they were getting as compared to the owners. And the guys kind of felt like they had no other choice but get involved with all those kind of shady guys to make more money and kind of get back at the owners. And if you look at the CPBL right now, it does kind of have an environment like that. So that would explain, I guess, why a lot of this stuff is happening today. The league is run by the GMs, so obviously they're going to be biased towards the teams having power whenever any kind of conflicts come up. There's no free agency. Guys don't make a lot. Multi-year contracts are usually reserved just for the best players, and everyone else is kind of going on one-year deals year to year. So I could definitely understand why players are going to be working with gamblers and triads and whoever else and just make more money and just be better positioned off from their own work. The average salary for all domestic players in the league was $61,200.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know off the top of my head. I didn't think to look it up what the, you know, cost of living is in Taiwan. I'm assuming that it's going to be similar to here, you know, the New York State, you know, New York City area. It is one of the more expensive metropolitan areas. Taiwan, you know, in the bigger city, I would assume it's a similar situation. So $61,000, it's a livable wage. You could definitely live comfortably on $61,000. But the same thing that's going on today in baseball is how things are in Taiwan in baseball and really any other or what's the right word? Any other field. I mean, you have the workers are always going to be the ones that are putting in all of the work and making least of the profits, and the people that own the place are putting in no work and making the most profits. So even though guys are being paid comfortably or decently, they still should be, you know, making more of the profits because the owners are, owners are making probably triple, quadruple that.
And there's no one to check them.
Right, and they are basically running things, so they have no check. So it's understandable why guys are going to get, you know, go to these gangs.
They don't have anywhere as extensive a minor league system as we do, I assume.
No, each team has one.
One team, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the fact that even with only one team, these organizations still can't manage to appropriately compensate their workers is pretty pathetic.
Yeah. They have no reason to, you know. If they can get away with it, they're going to. The only people that are paid, you know, decently, generally speaking, are the foreign players.
Mm-hmm. Manny Ramirez.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, teams are allowed to have four foreign players at once. Only three of them, though, can be active. So that other guy either has to be injured and, like, you know, working his way back or in the minors. And they usually sign these guys for contracts for half the season, which is kind of interesting, but it's smart in a way because it is tough to, you know, even if you are the best player in the world, you know, let's say you're Mike Trout, there is, you know, no one's going to doubt your baseball ability, but there definitely is some adjustment in terms of going to an entirely new culture. The style of baseball, you know, baseball is still baseball, but the style is a little different. So, I mean, Mike Trout would most likely, you know, rise to the top because he is Mike Trout. But
what would Mike Trout OPS in that league?
God, who knows?
5,000.
It is entirely possible that he goes 1-1-4.
It might. He said, "If there's one out he makes all year, will be someone robbing a home run." Yeah. The only out he makes all season. Dude, OPS is 1,100 ish these days. They'd probably OPS 1,700, 1,800, maybe more.
It is an extremely hitter friendly league, so
yeah, the pitching's not really.
No, it's not.
Good. No. But yeah, the split contracts are kind of interesting because I guess it gives the teams time to see if a guy is, like, adapting well. And I feel like there probably is not really much of a shortage of guys that are looking to reestablish their careers and just kind of go anywhere to continue playing baseball professionally.
Especially now that guys started to kind of come back to the majors.
Yeah, yeah, so. Like we were saying last week, I believe it was Dan, a lot of players that go to Korea then come back to the U.S. and they're actually able to kind of stick around again. Eric Thames being the most obvious example there.
Hunter Drew being the biggest pitching success. I mean, the pitchers usually don't last too long, honestly.
It depends.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, when players first started coming from Japan and Korea and to a lesser degree, Taiwan, usually they were, you know, older, you know, on the downswing of their career. So that definitely put that kind of notion in people's heads that, you know, oh, Japanese players, Korean players, blah, 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 are not good. I think now that more players are coming here in their prime or are coming here without even playing in Japan or Korea or Taiwan professionally, especially in Taiwan, you might start seeing more players from Asia who, you know, excel. I'm trying to think. Who was Junichi Tozawa? He was the guy that Red Sox signed.
Koji Uehara was also pretty good. I mean, the Japanese pitchers have been better in recent years. I just don't know that there's been any from the Korean League, aside from Ryu, or any from Taiwan that have been particularly good yet. I'm not.
Chin Meng Wang from.
Oh, Christ.
He didn't play in Taiwan. He played high school there. I don't know if he went to college or not, but
those
he definitely,
guys,
he definitely is the top one.
Yeah. I feel like that's like a big market inefficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Scouting younger players from Asia and getting them over here earlier.
There is a gentleman's agreement between.
I'm sure.
Oh yeah, between the NPB, KBO, not so much the CPBL, because most of the players that are signed as international rookies are from Taiwan, but in Korea and Japan, really, it's kind of hands off. A few years ago, not really a few years ago at this point, I guess, in the early 2010s, there was a big, not a scandal, but there was a big to-do because the Orioles scouted and signed a high schooler in Korea, and the KBO was very angry about that because they're not really supposed to be doing that. I don't remember his name. I remember his last name is Kim, but that doesn't really narrow things down.
No, it does.
But, yeah, so they are protective of their youngsters, and rightly so, because those are businesses, you know, domestic businesses that do need to draw from the same pool of talent.
Oh, I would absolutely be doing that, too, if I was running a Korean team.
Yeah.
It wasn't one of the bigger international signings a couple years ago, a Taiwanese shortstop, unless I'm losing my mind.
Yeah, the Red Sox, right?
Yeah, I think so.
He's like really good defensively.
Lutsu Wen.
Yeah. And then the Cubs, like maybe a decade ago. Wow, it might be that long. They had
Jen Ho Sing.
No, not him.
Oh.
They had a shortstop who was also good defensively. They traded him to the Rays for Garza. That's going way back. Matt Garza trade Cubs. Rays.
I haven't thought about Matt Garza in.
That's 2011. That is almost a decade ago. Jeez. Hawk Juli.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember that name.
And he was, like, fast in the minors and a good defender, and then he just never hit enough. And I think he got hurt at one point and lost a decent bit of that speed. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, so, I mean, that is the environment in Taiwan currently. Very offense-oriented, pitching not that great, and it's probably like high A to double A level of competition.
Not that I'm sure it would map well to because it's so far removed, but I know they've traditionally had a very good youth baseball. Like Chinese Taipei typically performs really well in the world, whatever the
Little League World Series.
Yeah, thank you. But I wonder, I've never paid enough attention, I wonder if they struggle with the pitching even at that level. Maybe it's just everyone, all the good players want to hit, and no one wants to pitch. Because I can't come up with a good reason why your talent would be so asymmetrically distributed.
That is a good question. I don't know.
And it's even like that in the other Asian leagues, too. Like,
yeah,
not to that extent, but the pitching in Korea and Japan is worse than it is here, and it's worse than the hitting usually.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's not as vast the talent difference, but like, there's not a lot of Shohei Ohtanis over there. You know, like he's one in a million anywhere, but he's like one in a million even more so there because of how good of a pitcher he was.
I mean, Yu Darvish was a huge deal too because
exactly.
No one pitches like this. I mean, there's I mean, there's that cultural trope about the pitchers being more eager to go to full counts or to take low. I don't know how much of that is actually real or how much of it is just projecting some outdated ideas, outdated cultural ideas about cultural differences. It is interesting. I'm sure there's some real experts about these leagues that could have some insight into why things are so imbalanced.
I remember reading something that Thames was talking about, and he was saying that like pitching over the hitting over in Korea helped him because there were so many more breaking balls that he saw.
Yes,
that like he struggled hitting the breaking ball in the U.S. and then he went to Korea and he's like, I see a breaking ball like almost as much, if not more, than a fastball. And I just wonder if that's a type of cultural thing, like you're getting to more full counts because you're throwing more breaking balls and they're harder to control and they fall out of the zone more.
That would make sense. But at the same time, the one of the bigger changes in pitching philosophy over the last half decade has been that you should throw your breaking stuff more, even among Western pitchers, right? So, like, I mean, we have guys who just throw slider after slider after slider, or Lance McCullers throwing 18 straight curveballs in the World Series. So
every lefty out of the pen throws 75% sliders.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
So that just might be a general change in baseball altogether. You're right. Mm. That's a good point.
I mean, it would make sense for the full count aspect, but it would also still suggest that their breaking pitches just aren't good enough to matter still. So I wonder how much of it is also a developmental thing. Like maybe their developmental infrastructure just isn't as maybe like their institutionalized baseball knowledge just isn't as high as in the U.S., right? Like where you can find coaches who you can find quote unquote expert coaches across multiple levels in many places. And maybe that's not as true in other areas where baseball isn't quite as pervasive.
Definitely have a smaller pool of talent. So you have a smaller pool of coaching as well. And like you mentioned about the kind of culture, and it's not radically different, but baseball, what's a good word of putting it? Truism? I don't really know, but the proper word. But I mean, in Japan and Korea more so, just because I know more about them than I do baseball in Taiwan, but I'm sure it's very similar. This bunting is still very prevalent. The idea of I will make an out to advance the runner it is more beneficial to the team. You know, that kind of stuff is very prevalent and big there, which is something that's very absent from baseball here, except in certain situations.
So many number eight hitters who are the shortstop, who like
bunt
three times a game, and they can't really hit, but they're very good defensively.
Yeah.
That I can appreciate.
I'm just I always find it interesting See, it's almost counterintuitive, right? You would think that there's this idea of sacrificing for the team and personal honor is an overused word in this context, I think. But like despite I feel like these would be elements that would lead to less celebrating after certain events, not more. And instead you have this awesome culture of just, I'm going to pimp the shit out of every bomb I hit. And I'm surprised that they're so that's so okay over there, which it absolutely should be. But based on these other elements, you might suspect it would be less so, especially than the U.S.
And it's celebrated. Like,
yeah, it's awesome.
it's easily my favorite part, I think, is how fun it looks and how crazy the games get.
Like,
games ending like 9-8 where dudes are like bat flipping on doubles and then there's like three errors in the field and it's just maximum crazy.
The defense is sometimes not the best.
But it makes it awesome and like it's totally different than the baseball we're used to. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, because there's like rumors that the KBO might be on ESPN, and I wonder how the American fan is going to, like, the average American fan is going to treat it and, like, take it seriously or not. But it's so fun. It really is.
Yeah. It is.
It's such a fun brand of the game that's totally different than we're used to.
TLDR, let people bat flip, man.
Yes.
Like, more bat flips.
Bat flip
can't
everything.
Argue with that.
Bat flip a
that.
big walk. Bat flip a sack fly to win a game. Like,
sack fly to win a game, I'm okay with. You bat flip a walk, you're kind of a tool, I think. Unless you're John Baker bat flipping after Aroldis Chapman walks you that one time. That's one of my favorite gifs.
Bases loaded, it's like the bottom of the
come net, on.
And you walk to tie the game. I'm throwing that bat. That bat's in the upper deck after that.
The fact that you could throw the bat to the upper deck might be the most depressing part of that story there.
Imagine Nimmo bat flipping and then walk and then running to first after his walk.
I'm down for it. Hey, Brian McCann retired, right? Yeah. Maybe we can have more fun in baseball.
Oh yeah, that's true.
If we're lucky.
Yeah.
All right, any last words for the week?
Make baseball fun.
Yes, make baseball fun.
Stop throwing balls at people intentionally.
Yes, yeah, it's rude.
More knuckleballers.
More knuckleballs. We can all support that. All right, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email over at our email address from complexthequeens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at Lucas is El Vlahos 343, and Thomas is Sad Met Season SZN. Subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcast from, rate and review it, and of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week, and until then, love the Mets.